Honorable Adrienne L. Bennett, Lee Adair Floyd, Derek S. Rajavori, John Patrick Brown, Petitioners Council, Raymond F. Morrow, Cullen D. Seltzer, Benjamin H. Katz, Respondents Council, Roman Lifson, David B. Lacey, Movements Council.
Mr. Chief Justice, do you mind if I remove my mask?
Sure, you can take it off.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice and Justices of the Court, if it pleases the Court, my name is David Lacey. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner and the movement, Lee BHM Corp., which is the publisher of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And if it pleases the Court, I'll try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal argument.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honors. What the newspaper is asking this Court to do is to either unseal its sealing order or to enter a public version of that order explaining why it sealed the records in this case. The newspaper obviously wants to see the sealing order so it can make an informed judgment as to whether or not further intervention is warranted, but there's a larger issue at play, and that's whether this Court, the Supreme Court, should be sealing its orders and the message that doing so would send to lower courts and to the public. So thank you for scheduling this hearing and giving us an opportunity to be heard on these, what we believe are very important issues. In terms of the analysis, there's really no question that, as this Court held in Shenandoah Publishing, that there is a presumptive right of access to court orders. So the burden, therefore, is on Judge Bennett to establish an interest so compelling that it not only overrides that presumption, but that it justifies the total and complete secrecy that she's asking for in this case.
As you understand the history of common law judges and common law courts, don't they have inherent power over their records in perpetuity, irrespective of adversarial proceedings that implicate them? And doesn't that, obviously in your favor, cut through a lot of the assumptions we make when we put finality on a pure adversarial proceeding?
It does. I think I agree with you, Justice Kelsey. If the question is, does the Court retain jurisdiction or authority to unseal an order after final judgment is entered, I don't think there's any question about that.
And it could be a petition could be brought by anybody under changed circumstances. Some file has been sealed because of whatever, and later there's a question about, kidnapping a child, and someone wants to come in and unseal the file. Wouldn't the Court always have inherent authority, irrespective of a pending adversarial proceeding?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. What I would say in the context of a motion to unseal the public's right of access, I think the courts have been near universal in saying unquestionably in that context, time has nothing to do with it. The leading case in that is a case called Mockheiber versus Davis, 537 Atlantic 2nd, 1100 out of the D.C. Court of Appeals in 1988. In that case, the D.C. Court of Appeals essentially said, when you're talking about a petition for leave to intervene, to object to a sealing order, or to unseal a previously entered sealing order, time is really not a consideration.
Is a leave to intervene actually the right instrument, the right procedure or instrumentality to get the job done? In other words, under the question that I was posing a moment ago, you would not be intervening in the adversarial proceeding because it's over, and you're not getting that. That proceeding is over, but the power of the Court in perpetuity to seal or unseal existing records. I mean, they're nothing but files in a file cabinet downstairs. We have that in perpetuity. We can always be asked to either deliver it or not deliver it based upon constitutional claims, et cetera.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I don't know if it's in Mockheiber, the case I just mentioned, but there is certainly a threat of jurisprudence, again, in the context of a sealing order to the effect that the rules of intervention, we call it a petition to intervene, but it's not the traditional intervention you would get in a criminal case or a civil case. It's called intervention, but it doesn't abide by those same rules. And I think Mockheiber does go into that, because in an ordinary circumstance, you would need an existing case, and time is an important issue that a court would look at as to whether you timely sought to intervene. Do you have an interest in this? What the Mockheiber court, one of its points was, and I think a lot of courts have followed this, is we call it intervention, but it doesn't follow the traditional rules of intervention that are now codified in rules of court.
So I take it you're asking us to functionally treat the petition to intervene as a motion to unseal?
Well, it's a petition to intervene and motion to unseal.
Right.
That's correct, Your Honor. The petition to intervene, as this court pointed out in Hertz versus Times World Report, that's a procedural mechanism. Again, it doesn't follow the traditional rules of intervention in this context.
I don't want to get you hung up on this too much, but what I'm asking is, couldn't you just file a petition to unseal? And that's a freestanding claim available under certain criteria, obviously when there are constitutional implications, very easy criteria to meet, with a showing of good cause, and then the court would exercise its inherent power to unseal a prior file without you intervening in anything. You're actually creating a new proceeding in that construct. So the last question is, should we just treat your petition to intervene as essentially that?
Yeah, I think that's correct, Your Honor. I'll just go back to Hertz, where this court said if someone petitions to intervene to object to a sealing order, you have to grant the petition. So it's really just a formality. In effect, what we're talking about is, should this be unsealed? So I don't think any court should get hung up on the intervention piece of this. It's just about did, in this instance, Judge Bennett satisfy her very daunting burden of establishing a compelling need for total secrecy of the sealing order? And we would submit that it's really daunting in this case, especially daunting, for two reasons, one of which is because she's asking the court to seal a court order. The presumption of access to court records is at its strongest when we're talking about a court order, the quintessential means by which courts exercise the power of the judiciary. The second reason it's all the more daunting in this case is because Judge Bennett is not asking for partial sealing. She's asking this court to tell the public nothing about why it did what it did, why it exercised the powers of the judiciary. In our judgment, under these circumstances, she needs to establish the most compelling of compelling interests to warrant that kind of extreme level of secrecy. Now, we don't know what the compelling interest is that she cited, but there is an indication in the record that perhaps it has something to do with the JRC, what I call the JRC confidentiality statute. And I want to be very clear, in our view, that statute does not require the automatic sealing of all court proceedings that arise out of a JRC proceeding or JRC investigation. The Constitution says it's the General Assembly who decides what is and what's not confidential about a JRC proceeding. And in this instance, the General Assembly has identified three proceedings that are confidential. The actual proceeding before JRC, a court proceeding that commences at the circuit court level to compel the attendance of a witness at a JRC proceeding, and a court proceeding, again, commencing at the circuit court level to compel the attendance of a witness for a deposition for use in a JRC proceeding. The General Assembly did not say adopt a per se categorical ban on all court proceedings, and this proceeding, a mandamus proceeding, that begins at the Supreme Court does not fall within the categories of records or proceedings and records that the General Assembly have said must be confidential. And in support of that, I would cite to this court a case out of the New York Court of Appeals called Nicholson versus State Commission, 409 Northeast 2nd, 818, New York Court of Appeals in 1980. And essentially, I'll just quote it, the New York Court of Appeals take was, it had a very similar statutory scheme for judicial JRC type proceedings as Virginia, and it said, quote, if the legislature deems it necessary to extend the prescription against disclosure to judicial proceedings connected with those of the commission, it may do so. However, a rule requiring such extraordinary relief should not come from this court.
So isn't the point as simple as the constitutional access to courts is a constitutional access to courts, but it may not be a constitutional access to any administrative body? It's a completely different subject.
That's correct. That's exactly our point, is if you look at the statute, what I call the JRC confidentiality statute, if you look at that statute and you read it, the plain language, you will see that this proceeding does not fall within the categories of proceedings that the General Assembly has said must be confidential. So we don't believe there's an automatic sealing of these proceedings. And again, you get back to what I call the case-by-case analysis of, is there a compelling interest, and is there anything short of total and complete secrecy?
How do we manage that under your best-case scenario? I mean, what does it look like? Do we issue the unseal the order and allow parties to make allegations based upon any further unsealing, or do we go right to the unsealing everything that was in the file?
Well, I'm in a difficult position to answer your question.
Which makes the last option pretty difficult for us to do.
Just
summarily unsealing everything without having this new adversarial process test the public's right and the limitations, if any.
Right. Well, I would say, Justice Kelsey, that if this court agrees with us that when you come to the Supreme Court as a sitting judge and seek mandamus relief from the Supreme Court, you don't have a compelling interest for confidentiality simply because what you're trying to keep secret is something having to do with a jerk proceeding, then I could see this court saying, well, we're not just going to unseal the sealing order, we're going to unseal the whole thing.
That's a possible result under your...
That's correct. That's
but
correct.
My question is, do we stage that? Because we're in virgin territory here in terms of legal proceedings.
Okay, so... Yes, and I hope you all can understand this is a little unusual for me. I'm usually talking about something that a circuit court has done and not a motion in front of this court. But yeah, sometimes it's staged because you want to give the public an opportunity to read this, in this instance, a sealing order, so they can determine, well, does that make sense, or is there an argument that the whole thing should come out or more should come out? Sometimes it's not staged because... I'm just speaking from my experience of doing these access cases for the media outlets in Virginia. Sometimes it just becomes so clear that, well, wait a minute. For the same reasons I would want to, in this instance, unseal the sealing order, it would make sense to unseal the underlying records. And that's a judgment that this court is obligated to make because you have all the information we don't. Again, to get to your question, Justice Kelsey, about, you know, how do you work through this stuff? One case, this is the most extreme I've ever experienced. We cite it in our papers. It's the U.S. versus Muhammad case. That was Judge Payne in the Eastern District. And what he did was it was about whether to close the sentencing proceeding. And what he did was essentially say, he wrote an opinion and he made it very clear that he had gone through the analysis. I believe there's a First Amendment right of access to sentencing. And then he got to the compelling interest, and he said, there's a compelling interest here. I can't tell you what that compelling interest is without violating the confidentiality provision. And then his opinion is really redacted. And then he comes back to him and says, now I got to think about it. Is there something else I can do? And he thought about putting it on a timer, which I think ultimately he did. That's really extreme in our view. I think, in my experience, there are ways, and we cited two examples of this in our brief, ways to get around things that people think are really confidential without having to disclose details.
Like protective orders and the like.
Well, I'm talking about from your perspective. How do I write this order? Because you have one issue, which is, well, this is a court order. I believe you really don't want to be in the business of hiding is not the right word, but sealing court orders from the public. At the same time, how do I write this if I think there is something that is worthy of confidentiality? And so, you know, the classic example is in a patent case, they're always talking about trade secrets. And so what the court would do is just say, well, there's a trade secret, or the financial data. You don't have to go into necessarily the details of that. There are lots of ways you can get around it, but I would just submit and I would ask that this court seriously consider whether or not when you come to the Supreme Court of Virginia seeking mandamus relief and you're a sitting judge, whether there really is a compelling interest for confidentiality at all. And to the extent there is, how far you're going to let that go and allow you to seal information or keep information from the public. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time this last minute for a rebuttal, if I could.
All right.
Thank you.
You have 51 seconds.
May I remove my mask?
Yes, you may.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justice of the Supreme Court,
May it please the court, my name is Lee Foyd of Bright Binyazin here in Richmond, Virginia, on behalf of the petitioner, the Honorable Adrian Bennett. You are right, Justice Kelsey, we are here today in virgin territory. The Richmond Times-Dispatch motion asked this court the very simple procedural question, which is, did this court properly seal the sealing order in the present matter? And the answer to that question is, of course, yes. Despite counselors' able arguments earlier and the voluminous briefing provided to this court on behalf of the newspaper, neither Mr. Lacey nor the papers have identified any controlling authority which speaks to this court's ability or prerequisites to seal a sealing order in matters pending before the Virginia Supreme Court.
What about the constitutional access to the courts? Doesn't that supersede the absence of any express statutory or rulemaking authorities?
Your Honor, I believe that it would in the absence of the commission confidentiality statute, which is...
But that governs the commission. It doesn't govern us.
Your Honor, respectfully, there are only three very specific conditions in which confidentiality associated with commission proceedings can ever be released. That would be in the instance in which there's perjury, the instance in which a judge is seeking to investigate the allegations of the complaint asserted against them, and the instance in which an individual has been asked to appear before the commission.
I'm with you on that, but if this petition or mandamus had not been filed, it would have remained secret, and they have no constitutional right. I don't know that. But it's different to say you have a constitutional right to a commission's record versus a constitutional right to a court's record. But she brought it to court, and now it's not in the jerk commission anymore. It's before us on a mandamus proceeding, and she's saying, I want the same level of confidentiality that I get in a completely different form. I'm struggling with, but you're not in that form. We're different.
Your Honor, respectfully, the legislature has made it very clear that public confidence in the judiciary is paramount. And that is why there is such a strong confidentiality statement, which is reflected by the legislature in 17.1913.
Counsel, public confidence in the judiciary requires that judicial proceedings be public, does it not? Generally.
That would be correct in the instance of when the commission has found that there is a well-founded complaint, grounds upon which are the removal or censure of a sitting judge or justice, in which those instances, the commission proceedings are unsealed and the record is submitted to this court. In the absence of a finding, such as here, of any issues of judicial misconduct such that are of the level that are sufficient for a good finding faith of misconduct, such that would reflect censure or removal, the commission, as a result of the legislative intent, keeps those records confidential in perpetuity.
Counsel, let me ask you another question, and this is not your case, but I could see it coming up in the future. A petition for a record to be sealed by a judge, and that judge asks for oral argument in order to speak to us about what's in that particular petition or motion. Would we clear the courtroom and the seven of us sit here with the public not being allowed to enter the courtroom to hear that oral argument?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I think that's where Supreme Court Rule 5:21C comes into play, which is that with respect to any matter that this court hears regarding the Judicial Inquiry and Review Commission, the court has very broad discretion to determine the procedures for any proceedings that follow the jerk commission proceedings.
So if we were to say we will allow that oral argument to be held in public before we choose to seal it or not seal it, that would be appropriate.
I think that it would be highly fact-specific, and that's why the discretion has been granted to this court to determine on a case-by-case basis what is appropriate. Because of the interests at play, because there are members of the judiciary and complaints against members of the judiciary are not taken lightly.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
And therefore, the statute requiring confidentiality of the jury commission obviously does not apply with the same force to us, because we can make exceptions to it, because it's a completely different form and there's another interest involved here, which is the public's right to see what happens in its courts.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would say that undoubtedly Rule 5:21C speaks to the wide discretion of this court in interpreting how best, in stating how best the procedures will be articulated for proceedings in this court following a commission proceeding. However, in the event that there is a circumstance such as this one was, in which there's an ongoing commission finding, an ongoing commission inquiry, and there has not yet been a finding of judicial misconduct, it would be appropriate and within the court's wide discretion to determine that that ongoing procedure, whether it's at the commission level or here in front of the Supreme Court, should remain confidential.
So it sounds like you, it sounds like you agree that we have the discretion and you're urging us to exercise it in favor of confidentiality.
Yes, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. You have 51 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be... That's okay. Our kids go to daycare together, so we've been close. I want to be very quick, Mr. Chief Justice. I agree with you, Justice Kelsey. There is controlling authority. It's the First Amendment. It's Article 1, Section 12 of the Virginia Constitution. And I agree with you, Justice Mims. There's public confidence is best served when the public can see what's going on in courts, particularly when they're entering orders. You asked a hypothetical about a closed oral argument in front of the Supreme Court of Virginia. That's difficult to fathom. In fact, we're here because it is, I've never heard of a sealed anything in this court. And this court sets the tone for the other courts. And that's part of what our concern is. And I just want to mention one thing. 60 days before the, or 6 months before the hearing was set, if you could speak to that, if you feel so the lower courts don't think you can sit on a petition like this for 60 days, because that would have the same effect of non-disclosure.
All right. Thank you,
Thank
Counsel.
You,
this court is adjourned.